Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father,
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Amen. I've asked Larry to give a talk today on his trip to India and up to Babaji's cave. And I thought, as by way of introduction, I'd read a little bit from my spiritual India when I went to Babaji's cave for the first time in October of 1998. 26 hours straight of bus and jeep travel from Rishikesh to Dwarhat. Pilgrimages are those times that try human souls. At least on this trip, it tried ours. We traveled on dirty, noisy buses, had insect bites from head to toe from who knows what. We're riding for hours perched on a seat only half supported or crammed between two other people on a seat built for two, at most, not the three or four that we were. It is hot, humid, and traffic was stopped because it is a holy day. It is the 10th day of Diwali. All that contrasted with the lovely time spent in Haridwar with devotees and their love for Master. The selfless service of Raj Kumar, the hospitality of Anand, the calm presence of Sri Tyagi, and the smiles and sharing of food with fellow pilgrim souls. But as always, the more important is the inner journey. In spite of, or perhaps because of, the difficult outward conditions, the silent, constant chanting of Jai Guru, Jai Ram, and the affirmation that all happens by the design of God never leaves the mind. This inner attunement sustains even the most travel-weary soul. Phyllis thought how wonderful it would be to stay in a 3- or 4-star hotel in Ranaket. But all the hotels were full when we arrived. That led to a jeep ride to here, Dwarhat, by two lovely souls, stopped for scenic moments, and finally arrived at the Yogada Satsang Ashram. The head ashram Swami is Swami Nityananda. Oh, the peace, the feeling of God, better than any 5-star hotel by far. And jumping ahead in the narrative, I sat on the rooftop, just short of a full moon, lit the clear sky night. The evening started at 5:30 when Swamiji rang the handbell and performed an arati, waving a burning lamp and then a sacred fan before the altar of Krishna and Radha. He then led us in energization exercises outdoors. We moved to the meditation hall where he also performed arati and waving the sacred fan in front of the pictures of our lineage masters, played the harmonium and led us in master's chants, then meditation until 7. A light dinner, soup and chapati, water and papaya chutney is spicy. The boy who works in the ashram literally ran to the meditation hall after the meal to play the harmonium and sing chants. I joined him with concurrent emotional fervor. Then up to the rooftop in the full moon. Tears welled up. Thoughts of how I had let God down came to me. Sincere sorriness in my heart. Humbleness. O Lord, I am nothing. Grace comes to the undeserving. Please, Lord, let it come to me. I yearn to see you. Know your constant presence. Come to me. Make me your very own. In this way I spoke to God. Perhaps the masters will not listen. I am too beneath their concern, but I know the eternal God is my constant friend and companion, even when I do not measure up. Is there to comfort me in my great need for him alone? Then I prayed, O Babaji, tomorrow we go for darshan in the place where you initiated Lari Mahasya. I have been purged with fever in Rishikesh. Now tears on the rooftop. I know I am undeserving of your grace, but please, I want to love and serve you with everything in my heart. Jai Guru is constantly in my heart and in my mind. Up early this morning, Swamiji was doing energization exercises in the pre-dawn night. Barely saw him as all was black. Up on the rooftop, lost in meditation. Suddenly, as if on cue, there is an explosion of sound, crickets, the cuckoos, chirps, and songs of birds. I opened my eyes and saw light had come. The smoke swirled over the second-story flat roof of the ashram building. Voices floated up with the smoke from below. The Punjab group, Aurora, another man, and two boys were heating water. It was done in a wood-heated stove, and water is poured into a heated coil, and then comes out the spout boiling hot into a pail. A simple beginning to the day of our visit to Babaji's cave. Later that day, well, we made the Himalayan cave where, it is said, Babaji initiated Lari Mahasya. I feel so proud of Phyllis. A year ago, a walk around her long block was almost more than she could do. Today, 95 pounds lighter, she made it through the ups and downs and uneven footing 2 miles each direction. Well, quite an accomplishment at nearly 6,000 feet. While there, meditating in the cave, I felt such a deep vibration, low, rumbling, powerful, at the base chakra. Like heavy machinery working deep in the mountain, the vibration was resonating powerfully in my spine and body. It has come back to me several times today, including the long meditation from 5:30 to 8:30 tonight. It was not without its oppositional force, however. The mind was whirling with attachment thoughts of Babaji appearing and other miraculous occurrences I secretly harbored almost unconsciously. The ego is attached to some high adventure outcome. But on reflection and meditation, I came to see the gift of that vibration felt in the cave as truly profound and powerful. Focusing on that vibration, visions of Master kept coming to me. Beyond those visions, I ask but for one thing, the universal vision. Babaji's cave is actually on Pandu Kuli, place of the Pandus, not Dronagiri as commonly reported. I was told Dronagiri is more widely known, and that is why the cave is referred to as being there. Historically, Dronagiri is the mountain, Giri means mountain, where Drona, the martial arts teachers of the Pandus, had meditated. Pandu Kuli is the place where the Pandus, including Arjuna of the Bhagavad Gita, had gone during their 13th year of exile. They were sentenced to 12 years living in the wilderness. The 13th year they were to hide, and if found, would be sentenced to further exile. Back in the ashram, while taking a tea break, Phyllis was in conversation with two YSS devotees from Nepal. When she spoke of Mother Hamilton as being our guru, they responded with the Self-Realization Fellowship version of Master being the last guru of this lineage. For some reason, upon hearing this, in combination with Swami Nityananda's glowing descriptions of Dayamata, put the whole question regarding Kriya lineage in my mind. I surrendered the whole question to Master during the visit to Babaji's cave. Inwardly, I submitted myself to Master's direction, whatever the outcome. After I returned to the ashram, I sat looking at Master's last smile picture that hung in my room. A light came from that picture that revealed an inner essence of Master's divinity. This light of Master supported an experience while on the mountain. It was there that I had the memory come very powerfully into my mind as a revelation of Master's letter to Mother. In that letter, Master spoke of giving Mother permission to give Kriya initiation, Diksha. He went on to say that hers was to be a new dispensation of a new order of SRF. This memory, combined with the friendly light coming from Master's picture, confirmed for me what Mother had from Master was unique. This, I felt, came directly from Master and resolved all doubts. Gratitude for Master's direct guidance was in my heart. Not satisfied with reciting by rote others' truths, I inwardly, directly received from Master what I needed to resolve my doubts. Thank you, Master, for your love, care, and guidance. I pray that you make me a fit instrument for carrying out your work. Jai Gurus. So, it has been quite a day. We shall see what the morrow brings. As I sat on the rooftop tonight, the full moon had a planet on its right. I talked all over my quandaries with God. You know, the test has been around separation with God. There is something around the YSS-SRF mindset that produces an effect in me that makes God feel distant. I worked on eliminating that distance. First, I acknowledged that sense of distance. Then I reached out to that intimate presence. A feeling of presence of God came within. Now I'm feeling much better. Mother always made God seem close, accessible. He most certainly is tonight. Thank you, Mother. Jai Ram, Jai Gurus. P.S. The young girls from the Punjab group have a nickname for me. In their own language, they call me Smiley, because I always seem to have a smile. They also gave me some fruit and a lemon drop candy. God is so kind through so many. Om Shanti. Been a long time since I've read this, and it brought those experiences very vivid and close to me, so I thought that I would share that with you, and it's a means of introduction for turning it over to Larry and letting him talk about his trip to Babaji's cave.
Well, I had a different traveling experience. I flew by turboprop. Is that better than a bus?
But on the other side, as long as it stayed in the air.
And then we rented a taxi from a town called the closest airline you could get. There might be one closer, but this is the one that was recommended. It was called Pantnagar. And so that took, how many hours from there? I guess it took about 6 to 8 hours to get to Raniket, which we found out they had gone the wrong way when we came back, so that's why it took so long. It was miserable driving too. And then spent the first night in Raniket, and I've got pictures of that. I think I'll just start on my pictures. It's easier. Raniket is a well-known place, and during Nrsimha Hasha's time, he was sent there as part of the people who were setting up Raniket for a military, a kind of a hill station, but also they were intending to make it as a military cantonment.
It's a military base.
Yeah, and still they're very strong, and everything today, you probably saw it the same way I did, perfectly clean, spotless streets, everything shipshape.
Right.
Yeah, beautiful town. And
when we drove through it, there's a golf course that you drive right through the middle of, and there's flagmen out there, and if somebody's playing through, they stop the cars and they play on through, and then you're allowed to move forward.
Yeah. beautiful town, nice feeling in the area. But he was there in the early days before the hill station was set up. Let's see. I'll start.
I don't think that's it. I think you're right.
Okay. That was just one I found on the web. Oh, I see. I'm going to have to change things around. Sorry. I can't do two videos. Hold me down. Maybe I can do it another way. Sorry. This Super JPG only wants to play on this screen here, only one screen at a time, so I'm just going to switch to the dual screen here. Hang on.
If you'll remember, Ranaket is where Lari Mahasaya was stationed by accident. Babaji's direction of his supervisor sent him there, and he had lots of spare time, and that's when he went wandering in the hills and eventually found Babaji, or Babaji called him to him.
So this is this is the goal. I just found this on the web, and it was maybe more the way it looked when you were there. Does that, this is 99, so yeah, it must have been very much the way you first saw it.
Unfortunately, they had damage to the interior of the cave, some graffiti and things. So they built this concrete wall and put this door that you have to have a guide there to unlock the door to in order to go into the cave.
Yeah. It's changing even more, as you'll see. Mm. So, and this is just, I got a really nice place that was available in Ranaket. Mm. And it was off season, so it's beautiful. And now this is driving from Ranaket to Dwarahat. I actually don't have very many pictures going from Patnagar to Ranaket, but it's a very beautiful drive too. It's breathtaking, especially once you got out of the plane and started climbing. So beautiful.
You can see the not long needle pine trees there. Yeah. There are wild roses, rhododendron trees that grow 40 to 60 feet high.
So this is leaving Ranaket, heading towards Dwarahat, maybe two to five miles. I can't quite judge because it's maybe more like.
You go down.
Yeah, but I wasn't. No, we had stayed in the ridge. We hadn't dropped down a bit at this point. We were still coming around the bowl. So this is probably more like 2 miles away. And then we stopped. I had him stop so we could take a picture of where we were just at. Mm-hmm. And there's Ranaket, famous 6,000 foot elevation, nice hill station, much cooler for everybody in the hut. And here's just my only picture of military presence. I wish I had taken more pictures, but the driver was very frenetic. We had breakfast at a little place right there. Very nice. Just a beautiful view, and I think I got a couple pictures from there. You can see down into the valley. And then I didn't mean to go there. I wanted to go to YSS. Let me just see if I can get to there. We are. So we ended up at YSS. After that drive, and that's a beautiful drive between those two towns. Much more, I mean, I did like going from Patnagar to Ranaket, but this drive from Ranaket on a beautiful day like we had to the ashram was just spectacular. Saw about a 10 or 12 foot long cobra go across the road. First time I've ever seen a cobra in India.
It's good luck.
And this is the room. Yogoda Satsanga, that's what Sri Yukteswar called the organization. When Master came to America, he changed it to modified it to mean self-realization fellowship. Sangha means fellowship. Satsanga. Does this room look similar to what you remember to? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have four beds, and usually they have three, and they're a little crowded. So I had the close one, and my friend Pulak Raj Malik had the far end. He's a lawyer from Dehradun. Lovely, lovely man. I showed you the picture here. So this is just to show you what the ashram conditions are. I was not allowed to take any pictures of the ashram. That picture of the YSS temple was taken by, I found on the web. They just said no pictures taken, so I honored that. But inside, I didn't know that at that time, and inside the room here, I don't think they mind. There's a little meditation room that you can draw the curtain on now. And so that's what that is. Swami Nirvanananda is the Swami there now. I wish I'd gotten a picture of him. I bet you on the web we could find one.
He wouldn't allow it.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, he's very shy.
Well, Swami Nityananda wouldn't allow it either. It's a policy.
Himself. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. The stonework on the tiles, really what they are, kind of a Shivalingam. And he's done, this is evidently Nirvanananda's contribution. He loves these use of stones. See the stones there too? Beautiful. And I wish I'd taken pictures from the kitchen too. It's quite nice. Just evokes the Shivalingam very nicely. And then there's a baseboard too. And then there's the picture that maybe you were talking about.
A smile.
Yeah. It's right in the meditation, I mean, right in the room, so it's probably the one you're talking about. And then this was as we were leaving, I had to find a clipped up picture, got a picture before we, of what the front door looks like. So then we'll, now what we did on the day of the 18th of October, is we went to Cocochina, which is now, it'd be probably instructive to get on Google Earth, and if I thought about it, I would have popped that up, but basically, the YSS Ashram and Dwarhut kind of sits straddling this, ridges of mountains kind of come together, and that straddles that area. And off on one ridge is where that YSS ashram is, and then you go back to town and then head off onto another ridge and kind of along a bowl that you get to this place, Cocochina. And it is just at the last place. Now there, actually, you can drive further, by the way. You can actually drive if you want. If you had a four-wheel drive, you could. We didn't want to take the car in there, and plus it's a nice walk. The first driving is anyway from the ashram to this point is about an hour. Back through town and then a long drive into the national forest there. And the owner there is he's on the web quite a bit. His name is Joshi, if you remember that name. And his father, when you were there, his father was kind of running things more. He's kind of taken over. His father just died a couple of years ago. Pulak Raj Malik is the man on in the middle on the left, the heavyset man. Sweetest man. I mean, you can't believe how much trouble you can have with an Indian as a fellow person, because it's noisy and all. They're just so different than we are. He was the model person. I just literally, from the moment we fell into each other, got along absolutely perfectly. Our taxi driver there is there on the left. I can't remember his go-to, I think his name is. And then this is our guide. Now, she's a really interesting character from Germany. She's about 40-something. Doesn't look it, does she? She's lived in Dwarhut for 5 years. And not recently. She's now married to an Indian man and lives in Mumbai. But about 2 years ago, she ended a 5-year stint. So she spent about 7 years ago. She first got involved and just changed her life when she got involved with Master. She told me the story, I don't remember the details, but anyway, so she spent 5 years in Dwarhut, living year-round too, cold times, everything, and had a small house, and was not, in those days, not allowed to stay at the ashram, and certainly not allowed ever, if there were not other women there anyway. So she just found it easier to get that. So she said she stopped counting when she'd been to Babaji's cave more than 30 times, and she says that was a long time ago. She's been there many, many times. And so she was our guide. We were lucky to get her. She was delightful. Had so many wonderful stories. Here's the driver. Of course, they always bring someone along with them on a long drive like this for 3 or 4 days. That's his brother. And his name was Sonu. They're both Punjabis. This is just at the top. So people know, at this Cocochina site, there's a place, there's a nice modern rooms now available there. You can stay.
Well, that's
and
new.
He's a good cook. I mean, Christine is her name, by the way. She raves about his cooking. Joshi's cook is very good. So she's
did have some rooms, but they're quite rustic.
And they still have some rustic ones. But this was built by an American architect by his father's suggestion. So he came in and built these. And you can see they're really nice. They're beautiful. And I don't know if I have any inside pictures, but then here's the ashram. So then, an hour drive to Cocochina, and then an hour to get to the cave. Now, half of the walk is very flat. And so I have slides that I already put together. So this is getting up on the day of the, you can see into, let's see now, is that Nanda Devi? I believe they think, is that right?
And Nepal.
And into Nepal, yeah. Okay, that sounds about right.
Nanda Devi is about 26,000 feet, I think, in that region. It's one of the tallest peaks.
So that's the range off to the right.
And there's Nanda Devi.
That is a famous looking mountain. So. No, and by the way, in Cocochina, his upper place on those where those houses were, you can see into China on that end. And you can see over to Nepal going the other, because we've moved a little further from here. This is actually a viewpoint. The drive continues on quite a ways yet before we get to the Cocochina. And that, you don't even see it when you're there, but you walk up to the top of that mountain, just a very short, maybe 100 feet up, and you can see, he says, the far mountains made a perfectly clear day on that direction. Mm-hmm. He says it was China. Of course, it goes much further. So these are just views of what it was like to walk along the flat roadway that we were walking along. And I'm surprised because David's explanations and stories is all I'd heard from anybody who'd been there. So I just had no notion. You never mentioned, or maybe there's more houses. Some of these houses have been here a long time, though, what Christine said. But I had no notion that this was this well populated. There's a lot of people in there.
I would imagine in Lori Mahasha's day it was not well populated. Okay. There was nobody up there.
Probably nobody.
But it's all terraced. They have all these terraces where they do a little bit of farming and raising some animals. And it's consistently grown more populated since I was there in 98. But it's always had people. And then you see... they have dogs up there, and the dogs will have these big spike collars around them because of the tigers, and it protects the dogs. Oh. Doesn't not to make the dogs tough; it's to protect them.
It's out of sequence there. So maybe, anyway, this...
beautiful slate,
this is part of
slate roofs.
And perfectly maintained. I'd seen slate roofs in Ireland that were all dilapidated because everyone's gone to modern buildings. Mm. And these are just gorgeous examples of slate. I can't imagine how cold they are. You can see how beautifully maintained they are. And just the terracing, you can see all that man-made terracing. There's water that flows down through there, and then you grow crops. Look at that.
And even though here at 7,000 feet, we've been there in February and March, and here you'd be under 14 feet of snow. But because you're closer to the equator, they get, so I was told by the driver, a couple weeks of snow in December.
Isn't that odd?
And very moderate, mild climate, not at all what you'd expect at that kind of altitude if you were at this latitude.
Yeah, I was surprised at that too. Ronnie gets a lot more snow, evidently. Mm. It's a little higher, but also it's not in rain. Dwar Hut's kind of in a rain shadow, evidently, too. Mm. Mostly it's the temperature. And look at that gorgeous house. Mm-hmm. Even the steps are slate.
Mm-hmm.
Using the rocks. You can see I like it. It's beautiful views. This man here was the key person we got the key from. He's a devotee. There's not a lot of YSS or devotees or masters around. There's a few. But most of these people have their own beliefs and kind of a Hindu native religion or tribal religion. So all these pictures here are all walking at about flat level where there's no uphill climb at all. See, just a little temple there, right there, mm-hmm. that's actually kept up by all the locals in that area. The owner of the property is back there. Now, we started climbing. I wish I'd gotten one picture before this, and I didn't have it. But we start right at the trailhead where we start going climbing. There's a man has a little place, and he had lost, say, 7 or 9. He had 9 cows left. And he'd lost 7 just in the last year to tigers.
Mm.
There's been so many Bengal tigers around and killing people. They only go after them with professional hunters if it's a man killer. Mm. They're mostly going after dogs and livestock. Mm-hmm. That you would just apply to the government and they give you a small amount of money. It's, I guess it really hurt the man at the trailhead quite badly because though they give him something, it's not enough. It's replacing all the milk that he's lost. Oops, that's sideways. Just a view of the as we're climbing up. And I found myself running out of air. That was my mm-hmm. biggest symptom. My muscles weren't tired at all. It's not that mm-hmm. difficult to climb, really. But I was breathing really hard. Mm-hmm. I realized I'd just come up from sea level too quickly. And Mm-hmm. And was experiencing it that way.
It's a little challenge that last climb.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is, yeah. Christine doesn't really have any trouble. And Pulak is from
Maybe Viradil. She had different air than you had.
She was getting there just before me. She was ahead, you know, mm-hmm. something. So. Mm-hmm. And Pulak is from Viradil, which is pretty high also. So he's used to that.
She's pretty active.
Yeah. She's pretty fit shape, too, you know. And there's a picnic basket that Ashram had prepared for us. Mm-hmm. And wasn't that a nice experience? There's the mail. I do have pictures. This is the trailhead. So I'm not sure why I'm out of sequence here, but anyway, this is where the man who lost the cows, and he's bringing out curd to us. It's been made for them.
Very nice.
Last week. That's the place they live in, dirt floor. They've been just downgraded into a smaller house because the owners of the property that they were staying at were came back and took over. They lost a job in the city and stuff. So they have five kids. One, the oldest in a senior in high school. Look at the marigolds. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And banks of them. Right? And there's the wife. There's my buddy. Very sweet.
The fellow in the center?
He's the owner, and that's his wife on the left. He owns this piece of property, and it's right at the trailhead. But, he and his wife have five kids that I was talking about there. So now we've climbed up to the first temple, which is where the palace was materialized. They've now marked it with a little temple, and we had the keys to get in there, too, so we got to meditate for about 20 minutes in there. Very nice feeling.
That was new last time, 1997, when we were there. Hmm? That was new then.
Western-style toilet off to the backside, plumbing, electricity.
That's new since we've been there.
It's very nice. You can see the concrete work that's been done. All locked up. And so we just sat in the steps there, and by the time we came back for lunch, it was all sunny, and we just had a beautiful, perfect temperature day, probably right about 68 or 65. And with the sun coming down, it was just lovely. There's the three of us. That's a little better lighting. And that's the view as you're walking up the hill to see that. It's a
dedicated climb.
Yeah. And this is the temple. There's a very nice view in there. I really liked it a lot. My older camera says, but sometimes it doesn't focus very well. You see, they put in this nice carpeted rooms that are well maintained.
It's like there's lots of chairs. Do they have some?
Yeah, they have Western style chairs and then places to meditate with pillows. They have all those pillows already there. It's used quite a bit. They have ceremonies and celebrations here. It's used a lot. Lirim Mahasya's birthday and Mahasamadhi Day are so close. That mm-hmm. 4 or 5 days is very busy.
End of September.
End of September. There's the bathroom right there. The key to that, too. I got a lot of pictures of that. Now, as we're leaving that, we're going up the hill. And unfortunately, it's difficult to take pictures of this because you're so close to it. You can't get a much mm-hmm. distance away from it to take good pictures. I think it'd be good to climb up into the hill. When I got in there, and this is on me too, probably from you, Dan. Have you seen that plaque? It's right above the doorway.
Yeah, that's been there.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. And this is looking inside. You can see some concrete work and some rocks. Well, I have a video actually probably there to show some of that. So that's the end of that.
When you go into the cave, it's this massive granite slabs on each side that you can go in. And it, was it wet in there? Did they bring the blue foamies?
No, they already had a thick plastic under thing and then something on top of that. It's quite comfortable. It was spongy.
You used to bring...
Was this even pointing to the... Was it? Okay. I didn't even know, so it's too late now.
It
looks like it's close to
me. They used to bring blue foamies up because it's quite wet in the cave. Well, and then there is it's walled off in the back. And apparently there was a yogi who went into the back portion and he left the body back there. And so for whatever reason, they walled that off then where he did that at. And,
how long is it?
It's perhaps 12, 15 feet.
And it kind of just narrows right down, so yeah.
Four or five people can reasonably sit, definitely two, three, four people can sit very comfortably in there.
How wide then?
Maybe 6 feet wide, and then it kind of narrows a little bit towards the top. So it's not huge, but it's quite comfortable, and I could see where if you had a fire in there for some days, it would dry it out, and it would be quite comfortable and probably... would be a nice cave. And apparently it was Lai Mahashya's grandson, who came up there one time and he said, oh, this is the cave my father said was the one where he was initiated by Babaji. So that's how they know where the cave is at. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you wanted to say anything about... Did you sit in there for some time and meditate, or Larry?
And interestingly, I had my first... Yeah, I finally got switched over to this machine. My first feeling was that we should... Everybody showed always pictures of everybody's meditating for, but always my earliest memories of being able to go there was that what would a yogi, what did the Himahasyas, how was it like for him to sit there?
Yeah.
Well, he was facing, in my mind, he's always facing outwards, and so that's what I did. Plus, it's more comfortable because it's quite a slope. Mm-hmm. And even though there's pillows and stuff, it was more comfortable just to sit and turn. And I wanted to look outward and see what it was like to see.
Sure.
So I felt a little odd because everybody else, there was only three of us, but I mean, and everybody seems like there's a way of doing things that you kind of want to go along with. So I felt much more comfortable as soon as I turned around. I thought I meditated a little bit, about 5 minutes, and then I just turned around and sat the other way, and it was very comfortable. And I can't imagine a yogi doing it any other way.
Right.
Especially with the soap thing that it was. But it is cold. Even with the pad, they have two pads. It was about that thick. It's still quite cold.
Mm-hmm.
And quite cold just the air, the humidity of the air and all that.
Yeah. Just in case you're thinking it's easier to meditate in a cave than it is in your home. Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a place to start meditation. You really want to be a mature yogi because the body's got to be, you got to be well beyond the body to do that. I mean, it's got to be another motivation, doesn't it? The overall feeling of going that whole for 2 days as I was traveling up to get to that thing, it seemed like every step I made mostly went higher too, but just this feeling of being uplifted the whole time, just being drenched in that area is just amazingly beautiful weather and nicest people. Everything just worked out perfectly. Swami Nirvanananda could not have been nicer. The arati ceremonies at the ashram, all of the things going on there, the food, everything was just very blissful. Very, very, very nice.
Yeah, I find that so many places in India, you go to a temple and you feel it as soon as you come onto the precincts of the temple. You feel the vibration of that temple, and whether it's Ramana Ashram where Ramana Maharshi stayed, or Anandashram, Papa, and Mataji and Swamiji. But these hills themselves seem to have a spiritual vibration. They hold a vibration. Mm-hmm. And just walking in these hills is an experience all in itself. But that cave itself also holds a very powerful vibration in it, as you can imagine.
Actually, the walk up from the trailhead was really uplifting. And then when you get to the first temple and as you're walking into the cave, that whole piece of the hillside is really beautiful, really powerful feeling. And it's just a pathway. There's other pathways that go right by the cave that head on up to the top of it. It's not like it's completely a destination. Again, those were in my mind, that's what I thought it was. But there's people walking through that area. We saw a couple down below walking that day, but evidently there's people traveling through it all the time, going to different temples. And a tremendous experience. I'm so glad. It was it's one thing I've always wanted to do. I think even mm-hmm. more than Ron Chi or places like that we'd all like to go to. It's where it all started.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. The Swami Nityananda, who I mentioned in the writing, he was there the next time that I went to, complaining bitterly that he says, "Oh, you people, you get to go anywhere you want. I'm stuck here." And he's a bit of an organization man, so for him the center of the universe was Ranchi, where the headquarters are and all of that, and he felt very much kind of out in the hinterland. And I'm thinking, you're at the spiritual center of the universe and you're looking elsewhere, and isn't that just the nature of the mind? You always want to be. And later he went to Delhi, so I hope he found a lot more happiness.
Swami Nirvanananda also had similar things, feelings, but he's really resolved them. Apparently, he's completely integrated there. Everyone loves him. He's very active. He's all these plans for the ashram. He's got his own ways of doing business, and he's allowed some freedom to do it. So, you think he's just resolved it? He was first with Master in '66. I think he was in his late teens, early 20s when he first came to India. And got involved, I think he went to Russia.
The Japanese national.
Mm-hmm. Speaks English very badly, in the sense that he's very difficult, you have to really concentrate. Like when he was reading that one evening, it was very difficult. But if you concentrated, you could hear what he was, and get used to his way of speaking. But an extremely shy, I think, for that reason. Mm-hmm. But a sweet-natured soul, and basically, he's 75 years old. He first saw the cave in 71, he said, and it was very different than it is now. Mm-hmm. And he was there when Ma came, Daya Ma came in 63 or so, mm-hmm. and walked up there also. And that's when she decided to do have an ashram there, and then to do the other things that were going on then. But he walks in one day from Raniket to the cave, and that's quite a feat, mm-hmm. because you drop down, I believe, 3,000 or 4,000 feet, and then you climb back up four. Well, you climb back up because it's about the same level as Raniket, so mm-hmm. whatever you drop down, you climb. And 75 years old, you can outwalk anyone there. In fact, they've now done that walk this whole month of November. They've done it in two stages now because people can't keep up with it.
Mm-hmm. I oftentimes thought that Lhari Mahasaya really took a hike to get to that cave. I don't know where the military station was, but you have to go down a fairly significant valley and then come back up again, cross a river, and then come back up on the other side. And it's quite a hike to get there.
But worth it, right?
Well worth it. I'm sure he considered it well worth it. and it's absolutely a wonderful experience to be able to have. If you ever have an opportunity to go, I highly, highly recommend it. The hills and the mountains themselves seem to hold a spiritual vibration, as nature oftentimes does. And, mm-hmm. But it seems like there are specific places in nature that get very highly concentrated. And it's interesting to think that India, being the cradle, really, of so much of spiritual consciousness, you have these mountains that are relatively new, the subcontinent coming and pushing up these mountains, the Himalayas, and coming right up out of the seafloor and to these tremendous heights. And there's something very special about that whole area of the world, and probably some kind of combination, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the saints come first and spiritualize those mountains? Well, probably the saints came and found those spiritual climates in the mountains and loved it and stayed there, but then they built on it too. And Swami Muktananda from Anandashram, he told the story of a man that he met when he was traveling up in the mountains there, who was a Westerner. He was a devotee of Satya Sai Baba, and he was up there and he didn't have many clothes. He said it was quite cold and he had no shoes on, and Swami Muktananda said, are you all right? You don't have any shoes on? He says, you people have lived here all of your life, You're used to these vibrations. When I walk these trails, I don't want to miss any vibration at all where some saint may have walked, so I don't want anything between me and this trail. Is there anything I can get you, you know? And he was traveling without money in India, a Westerner. And he says, well, an umbrella would be nice. So he bought him an umbrella and gave it to him. And umbrellas are very nice because for the sun and for the rain. When the monsoon's coming, it really pours down rain. And when the sun beats down on you, it's really intense. So it's nice to have an umbrella. It comes in very handy there. So to get a feeling for the richness of just what it looks like there, these beautiful long needle pine trees. The rhododendrons in the springtime, you can stand up on that Hanuman temple, which is up on the top of Dronagiri. You can probably see the little pinpoint of light at nighttime shining up there. And there's a beautiful kind of tradition there that you give a prayer to Hanuman and you go away, and if your prayer is answered, then you come back and you bring a bell. And you hang a bell. And there are probably a mile, maybe not a mile, of stair steps going up there. Something completely filled with bells, three levels high, all the way up to the temple. The temple is complete, where people have come, miracles have happened, and they've hung their bell up there as a result, because their prayer had been answered there. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place to visit. And that's on the top of Dronagiri. And one of the legends is, and it's probably like where Washington slept here, you know. There's lots of places that fit in with the mythology there. But it's said that hill, this Dronagiri, is the one that Hanuman went to find the rare herbs to revive Rama and Lakshman during the battle that they had with Ravana. And he couldn't find the herbs, so he said, to heck with it, he just picked up the whole hill and flew all the way back to Lanka. He says, all right, you find the herbs. I'm not good at that, you know, you find them. And so the herbs were found and they were revived, and back into the battle they went. And it said that was the hill that he picked up and took all the way down there. So filled with legend and wonderful stories, and it's really an extraordinary place, I think. Rob Ivey, for all of you who may have known Rob, when I first met Rob, I guess that was 2005, he was leaving, he was at an ashram, and he was going north, and he got some inheritance money from his father. He said, I could have bought a house where he's at in Texas, or I could retire in India. And he wanted to go up there and meditate full time. He's a serious meditator. And he wanted to go up there. So he wasn't at Dwarahat. He was in a place that was about a day's travel away from Dwarahat. And he ended up leaving the body a couple years later. He had a brain tumor and left the body. But he was very nicely ensconced in this beautiful like you saw the views of Nandi Devi. He had a 120-degree view. Nandi Devi was dead center and all these snow-capped mountains just all across them. Beautiful, beautiful place. I think it was a higher altitude because he took Carl and I out to his favorite meditation space, and we were both breathing heavier than we were at Dwarahat. It was the air was getting quite thin there, but beautiful, beautiful. So, and SRF has beautiful ashrams. They're very, very well maintained. So, did they give you a limit? They tend to limit you on how long you can stay. Just a couple of nights, I think.
Yeah, I think it's three.
And it's run by a swami. So if you're a woman and you're the only woman there, you're not allowed to stay. When Phyllis and I arrived, when we were traveling there the first time, no other women were there. I said, oh, you can't stay. And then a little bit later that day, a group came, and there were some other women, so she was allowed to stay, which you understand why, being out in a remote area like that, and just to avoid any problems that way. So, but they're beautifully beautifully maintained buildings, and they provide the guide to take you up to Babaji's cave, and it's really quite a wonderful experience.
And the focus is on Master. There's no other forms and our lineage. It's all very nice that way.
Bhajan, singing God's name with harmonium, and Arati. They do at this temple. They do have a Radha Krishna temple. It's unusual, I think, for SRF. And then they do an Arati each evening with the Radha Krishna.
I heard there's a temple at Ranchi also.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if it's a.
I've not been to Ranchi, so yeah. So I certainly feel Masters and Babaji's and Lari Mahashya's presence there. Master apparently, from what I could discern, had never made it up to the cave up there. That was not some place that he had ever gone to. Nor Sri Yukteswar, for what I know. But
Master made attempts.
Yeah.
Yeah, to Kashmir. But Kashmir is quite a different track.
Even when he was going as a child, he was struggling.
Mm-hmm. He may have had his sights on there. I don't know where he's headed for during those forages, but and I don't think Lari Mahashya ever went back up there either, not that I know of. So. But it's the people. The nice thing too is the people are very much calmer there in the villages and things like that. You get in the big cities and you get accosted by people who are trying to sell you things, beggars. Everything is quite and I think it's probably still true, isn't it? You arrive there and it's quite. The people are just seem to be calmer. Very, a little stouter built, and bright eyes and clear skin and very pleasant people. English is not spoken as much as down in the other cities. You find a lot of people who don't speak English. But the children are beautiful and they'll come up, and especially if you have a camera, they're all for it.
Picture, copy.
They were confused by us when we had one of the first digital cameras that we were taking, and then we'd show them the picture. My sister-in-law Lois was there. She'd take a picture, but she had a regular camera, no digital image on the back of it. But they'd come and they'd want to see, what's your... No, I don't have anything to show you. Anything you wanted to close with, then?
It's a very nice, fulfilling experience, completely flawless. Just to close with the notion that what got me, really, my earliest notions of this path came from Neem Karoli Baba's, in the book Be Here Now, and that the influence that Ram Dass had in the world, in the West. So we all kind of roll our eyes at, but he's definitely had an influence, and it's definitely the power of him. And so the temple there on the way from Raniket down to Guwali was you talked about too. I don't know the name of the temple now, but it's Hanchi or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was beautiful. It was like walking into Disneyland, kind of a feeling. Mm-hmm. It was so clean and scrubbed and all the bright colors.
Mm-hmm.
But the odd disconnect was how much spiritual power there was in that ashram as soon as you walked across the bridge. In a sense that we think of Disneyland as a place that you, it's not hedonism, but it's a pleasurable thing. Yeah, it had all of those kinds of trappings.
Mm-hmm.
Or notions associated with all these bright pictures.
No rides there. Conjuring up pictures of heaven rides. Not materially anyway.
And so we got to go. I got to go to that temple and ashram, and it's the one where he spent most of his life. He didn't pass away there, but it was one where he spent at least the years of Be Here Now and all that era before he passed away. And we got to go into his back room where he was actually, lying most of the days or hanging around and peeping out. If you know the stories of Neem Karoli Baba, a very odd person. But he was always playing hide-and-go-seek with the devotees, and so got to go in there. And as soon as I touched my head to the bed, just immediately went back to 1970 and my first influence with him. Because in that book is the picture of him. named Cory Baba, although he doesn't give his name in the book, the picture's there, and it just came so clearly, and just a complete collapsing telescope of all the things that occurred from that point forward to where I was sitting there, and I just felt this tremendous
shakti.
Closure and his shakti. The whole ashram was filled with that, but yeah, that was the sharpest point of it. And then as soon as we walked out, the guard came and closed that door up, and I'm not sure what was going on. We walked around to the Hanuman portion of the temple, which was all closed up when we first walked by, and then they had just opened that up. So we got to spend, and I had a similar feeling there with that, because that's the focus of his life, was Hanuman.
Yes.
Baba was supposedly even an incarnation of Hanuman, so all his temples that he did were all focused on Hanuman, and all dedicated to Hanuman. So what a great, great master he was. Some people think he was a disciple of Babaji. He's in that same area. I don't doubt it a bit that there's some relationship there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. And pictures and talk.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty. Of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at
thy
feet
and surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are
radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he. Bliss. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the light within you. It's lovely this week that we have a day that's dedicated to Thanksgiving. And so if you're busy with family gatherings and to-dos, just ask you to spend some time in deepened meditation. I always find that feeling close to God always brings great gratitude. It stands to reason that if we spend some time in deep gratitude, we will feel close to God. So let us thank God for the greatest blessing in this world, our spiritual path, in which we have the means and the opportunity to merge our little soul into the vast expanse of God's great Spirit. Let us not waste any opportunity to deepen that knowledge and awareness and feeling of our connectedness with God. And feeling great gratitude for our guru lineage, for their sacrifices, for their willingness to give these teachings so freely, and to expend themselves tirelessly while they lived. Rajasi, having an experience with Master after he left the body, said, whether you can believe it or not, Master is more busy in the astral realms now than he was even on the physical realm. So they continue their tireless work. And if you open yourself and attune yourself to their consciousness, they lead you to even greater God consciousness. Om Tat Sat. Father, Son,
Holy Ghost, Om Tat Sat. Blessings, blessings.
I would like